Hello, everyone, and welcome in to a special episode of the Irish NFL Show with me, Colm Cronin. And I am delighted to be joined by a good friend of the show, but a man I also consider a good friend of mine, Connor Rogers from NBC. Connor, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, Colm, I'm good, man. It's always a blast with you. I'm excited. It's almost draft time. The drama is kind of heating up. I feel like every morning I wake up, there's a new twist. So I'm ready for it to be draft night. I'm quite well.
I can imagine you're ready to be drafted because I was looking and your first mock 1.0 came out back in August. Yeah. And I want one of the things I thought might be a little bit interesting to start rather than just going at the top end of the draft. So like some of the guys who've fallen away. Like and like falling away means they were pretty high up and maybe they're like Chop Robinson is right. One who early on back in August, I think he was maybe within the top five, certainly top six, seven.
Yeah.
Now I think in your latest you have him in around 29. But who, like I suppose the thinking about that and maybe about others, who are some of the guys that have fallen and maybe some of the reasons for that? Because that's something that doesn't necessarily get talked about at this time of the year.
It's a great point. You made me bring this up right now. So this is from August 25th. How about Leonard Taylor going 13th overall of the Falcons? He's a day three player now. He did not build off of his 2022 season. He did not test well. The bottom line is this is somebody that was kind of living off of recruiting reputation for a long time. He was a five-star recruit. He was a big deal for Miami. He had moments at Miami. There's no denying that. He's obviously going to be drafted, but at the end of the day, he was viewed as a consensus first rounder in the preseason. And now it's hard for me to justify him going in the first three rounds. And a little bit in the same mold, Kalen King, the cornerback out of Penn State, had a lot of hype. I'm seeing him go 14th in this original mock draft. And the bottom line is the tape in 2022 was great. It was feisty. Yes, he was a smaller guy, but we went through that process last year with Devin Witherspoon, and Witherspoon was a phenomenal player that had a phenomenal rookie season. And King really struggled in 2023. You kind of saw some of his warts come out against the top talent of Ohio State. He didn't look right at the Senior Bowl. He didn't run very well. He's not a big corner. So those are two defenders that looked like future first-round picks that honestly are both going to be waiting a long time. I don't think either of them go till after round three in this year's draft.
Yeah, I mean, it is obviously interesting to see how things, I suppose, play out from the final year in college, but also obviously in terms of guys who enter the league, because we know it's not just talent, it's landing spot, it's the coaching staff, it's luck with injuries, it's finding the sweet spot. I suppose the one of the pieces, maybe I'll be selfish and I'll ask you this, because the Denver Broncos and Sean Payton, and there are many which ways they can go, but obviously I think Terry Bolian had a piece yesterday that basically Sean Payton is prepared to trade anything that isn't nailed down, essentially in Mile High, to go up in the draft. And for you, because I know, you know, you've been maybe higher on Penix and some of the others, we know that, you know, they're not getting Caleb. Obviously, that's
right.
Done. For what was discussed yesterday was this year's first, next year's first, and Pat Surtain. If that is, like, yeah, that's, I mean, that's a haul, right?
I'm not trading Pat Surtain, right? Yeah.
Is there any of the Drake May Daniels? And I know you have, I think, Caleb and May as your kind of top tier, yeah. And then quite a gap to the next. If May happen, if the Commanders go with Jaden Daniels at two and the Broncos, I don't know if the Patriots would accept that, but it would maybe worth a package like that, Connor, because that's a hefty package for you. But would he have the talent to justify that?
Colm, this is exactly, you know, perfect timing, because what I'm hearing right now is that the price to move into, whether it's 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, I mean, it's really expensive right now, where teams are proceeding with caution that, hey, we'd love to have a franchise quarterback, but if we surrender, you know, I've heard rumors of 3 first-rounders. Like, are we comfortable with surrendering 3 first-rounders for J.J. McCarthy? I'm not comfortable with that. So when you play the game, it almost feels like there's no entry point into 1 and 2. Caleb Williams will go to the Bears. One of Drake May or Jaden Daniels, barring a surprise, will go to the Commanders. The way I answer that question is, would I pay a premium to go into 3? And I'm not trading Pat Surtain. That's where I draw the line, because now you're starting to trade franchise players and you're just being counterproductive to your process. I would never rule out anything with Sean Payton. Like, Sean Payton is a wild man. I don't think he really cares, about trading guys that are there before he got there. But let's call it 3 first-rounders to go from where they are to 3 for Drake May. That intrigues me, because May can really be an upper echelon guy with some seasoning and with some development. So Denver's in a weird spot at 12, because Minnesota's in on the quarterbacks in front of them. The Raiders right behind them are in on the quarterbacks as well. I think New England is starting to trend to wanting to stay and take one of Drake May or Jaden Daniels. I think there is some pressure from ownership. There hasn't been a ton to be excited about there. They need to have some beacon of hope to sell the future of the franchise to the fans. So with Denver, the conversation to me almost comes down to, are you willing to pay to move up to go get Michael Penix or Jaden Daniels? That just feels like a lot associated with a lot of risk. There's a lot of metrics with Daniels under pressure and throwing the middle or not throwing the middle and bailing pockets that scare you. I love Michael Penix. He's my QB3 in this draft. He's got a big arm. I think he'd have some success in Denver. I rank him at the 19th overall prospect. Am I trading everything to go up and get him in the top 5? Even that seems kind of risky. So the long answer for me is, like, I know this is where it makes it a little confusing with what Denver has done. Like, they didn't really do anything on the pro market, that you have this insurance policy. If the Raiders don't come out with a quarterback in the first round, I think Gardner Minshew can win you some games. If the Patriots don't come out with and they probably will, but if the Patriots don't come out with a quarterback in the first round, they take Marvin Harrison Jr. instead, Jacoby Brissett can win you some games. I don't look at Denver as a team, like, they have to come away with a quarterback in this draft that can probably play this year. And that's what makes their situation so difficult to weigh.
Just on that, and I get it's a year out and that all your focus has been on 2024, but part of the talk, I suppose, is that the teams are more willing to go up this year because next year's class is seen as that much weaker. Now, I get we're a year out, but would you subscribe to that thinking, Connor, that looking at it right now, and things can change and players can rise and players can have great seasons, but are the pickings in next year's QB class that slim? Is that why we're seeing QB needy teams? At least the smoke is there. We'll see next week if that's the case, but is it based off of next year?
I think so. Now, when I do the quarterbacks for next year this summer, I'll have a more firm answer. But even to be fair, because I've seen Carson Beck from Georgia, I've seen Shedeur Sanders from Colorado, this year we're going to have at least 5 quarterbacks taken in the first round, right? Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy. How many years are 5 quarterbacks looked at as guys that are worth first-round picks? And Bo Nix can sneak in. Like, there's a world where Bo Nix sneaks in. So when you're just playing the odds year by year, just by the odds, next year will be weaker than this year. And that's, now to be fair, before this year, I had Michael Penix as my QB3. I saw this road for him. I did not see this road for Jaden Daniels. And a lot of scouts in the league had day 3 grades on Penix. They had day 3 grades on Daniels. So, and Bo Nix took another big leap this year. Those 3 guys played themselves into round 1 when they were not thought of as round 1 guys. Drake May and Caleb Williams, this was always the road for them. There was even people over the summer that looked at J.J. McCarthy and said, I think he has a chance to be a future first-round pick, even before this year. And I thought his tape in 2022 was not good. Took a big step up in 2023. So it's weird to say no chance because we've had multiple breakouts this year. But at the same time, when you just play the odds, it does seem unlikely. And that's what the Broncos are looking at. That's what the Raiders are looking at. That's what the New York Giants are looking at. All of these teams that you go, do they have to press the panic button and take a quarterback this year? There's reasons why they are at least thinking of it because of the position they're in. They don't think they'll be as bad as they were in 2023 this upcoming season. compared to the supply. It's all about demand and supply. And right, there's always the demand for quarterbacks, but there is not always the supply. It feels like this year has the supply.
Maybe just on Penix then, because you know, I think it was Sam Monson who was actually on the show. I think Shane did the interview with him yesterday. Sam had put out, like, this seems kind of chalky, this year's draft, a lot of people kind of feeling. And he asked for who were some of the guys that maybe people felt that they were higher on than the consensus. And Penix was top of your list in that. What is it about him, Connor, that impresses you so much?
Well, I think there's a lot of intangibles and a lot of physicals, right? Like, the intangibles to me are that he's been a college captain 4 times, like leader of leaders, right? Faced adversity and came back. His body was wrecked at Indiana. He got himself healthy and right, transferred, was not guaranteed to be the starter at Washington when he transferred, won that job. And then by year two, took that team to a national title game when nobody had expectations of them being a team playing in the national title game, right? And you look at the statistical aspect of it, the guy was absolutely phenomenal. So, I mean, you're talking about just big-time throw after big-time throw, which is PFF's metric of the special, the NFL. I mean, 43 of those this year. Then when you look at, you know, obviously the actual ability on the field, this is an arm that is a howitzer. It could challenge every single level of the field with serious velocity. I don't think the injuries have impacted his tools. I think he still is very physically gifted. I think that he has a decisive nature of when to let throws, like when to rip it. He only took 16 sacks over the last 2 years, 8 sacks a year. That, yeah, the line was good, right? It wasn't the 90s Cowboys offensive line. Troy Fatanu will be a first-round pick. Roger Rosengarten, his right tackle, will be drafted. But it's not a line that's elite. It's good, really good line. Penix sees things pre-snap that keeps himself out of trouble, where he goes, okay, the pressure is coming from there. I could throw it hot there. Okay, they're giving me this coverage look. I understand where I could throw it. Or if I have to throw it away, I am not taking a sack. Those are things that a lot of people are missing. So, and obviously what they're not missing is that him throwing outside the numbers, he's a gifted thrower outside the numbers because of the arm strength. So I shouldn't say I'm surprised, because people have come around on Penix. Like, he's being projected right where I thought he should be the whole time. It just felt like it took us a long time to get out of the mold that he's a round three quarterback. And he's a round one quarterback with physical tools, with intangibles to be a leader, and a lot of things that quarterbacks don't come into the league, ready with yet, right? These guys are young. They need seasoning. Like, he's played a lot of football. He's passed the adversity test. He's played well in big games. And people hold on to the national title game so much. It's weird. People glorify him for the Texas game in the semifinal, and people tear him down for the national title game, where the answer to the evaluation question lies somewhere in the middle, the 2 years he's played football at a high level for Washington.
So over the past few years, and I know we've kind of discussed this previously, we've seen cornerbacks come into the league and look like all pros immediately. We mentioned Sertan earlier, Sauce is another, but there are plenty of others around the league, guys who've just come in and immediately been fantastic. What is the cornerback class like this year, Connor?
I like the depth of it early on, right? There's no Sauce. There's no Witherspoon. I don't even know if there's a Christian Gonzalez, but it's a class that in the middle to the late first round has talent that could do a lot of different things for you. Like, Quinyon Mitchell to me might be just as good as Christian Gonzalez, where Quinyon Mitchell is physical. I like his mental makeup. He's a good tester. He's stepped up with the level of competition at the Senior Bowl. There's ball skills. Then you look at, you know, somebody a different flavor like Cooper DeJean, who might be a big nickel for you. I think he can cover on the outside. I don't know why people are so hell-bent on saying he can't play outside corner. He's got excellent ball skills. I mean, really, really catches everything with body control. Good punt returner. Great tackler. Nate Wiggins from Clemson. One of the more explosive, loose athletes. He needs to gain some weight. But you want to talk about the ability to mirror receivers on an island, he's got that. Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama, 2 more first-rounders. Like, these guys play a ton of press coverage. They're physical, especially Terrion Arnold, former safety recruit. He comes down and tackles. Kool-Aid loves to come close down on those underneath throws. And, you know, I think speed at times has given him fits over the top. But he's a great press corner in terms of just asking him to do that all the time. I like this corner class a lot in the first round because I think all those guys are starters with big time upside.
In terms of Brett Veach made some comments yesterday, I think, and I've seen others kind of talk about the fact that they feel that, you know, maybe the first kind of three, four rounds this year have some incredible talent, but they feel the back end of the draft really isn't as strong as it has been in years past. Lots of discussion around that. Some people talking the COVID, the extra COVID year, some talking in NIL perhaps, and that kind of finding its feet. And some people saying, nah, this is just talk. It's as strong as it ever was. And this is just a kind of a creation that people have spoken into existence. What's your thoughts on that? Connor, is the back end of the draft, does it look different this year than it does previously? Or where does that stand?
I don't think it's particularly strong. I think it has depth at wide receiver. I think it has some depth at running back and interior offensive line, but it's not a deep quarterback class. It's not a deep linebacker and interior defensive line class, and the pass rushing class is okay. And I think where, you know, I align with that thought process is there are a lot of guys that still have the extra eligibility COVID year that can hold on, that don't need to declare. And until guys are forced to graduate into draft status, like lose no more eligibility, this has been a thing. So I think there is actually science behind it or math behind it in terms of the pure volume that until next year, and next year might be the boom. If I have this correct, next year is that last year where it's like, okay, now everybody's going to be out the door. We're not playing this game of this is a sixth year senior. This is a fifth year senior. So I think, yeah, I think there is merit to that because I think there is a cutoff of this draft where you start to see the talent maybe pivot a little bit at like player 170, where if you have a lot of sixth and seventh round picks, there might not be much of a difference in terms of the priority undrafted free agents.
Now, you obviously have your ear to the ground for Green Gang, and at 10, there are many different ways they could go. What do you think they might do? Because they obviously are a team with a lot of eyes on them, and people, a decent following on this side of the Atlantic.
One, I think they're very interested in trading down to recoup the day two pick they lost in the Aaron Rodgers trade, because they can get a good offensive lineman even in a trade down, or they can look at a different wide receiver. Now, picking a 10, the opportunity to do that is far from a guarantee. So you actually have to talk about, okay, what if they are at the pick and they just have to pick a player? Tons of Brock Bowers smoke. They love Brock Bowers. There's no denying that. I think the difficulty for the Jets is that the offensive line class is also really good. You're not expecting a full season out of Tyron Smith. You had AVT go down to season-ending injuries the last 2 years. Joe Tippmann had a lot of injuries coming out of college. This is an offensive line that will face adversity again. They're better equipped to face that adversity, but you'd like another high-end young player, not even necessarily waiting in the wings. If you draft Troy Fatanu from Washington, he's probably going to push the start at left guard over John Simpson. Maybe you could say the same thing about Taliza Fuanga, who's a right tackle at Oregon State, but athletic and gifted enough to push at left guard. And then when that day comes that one of your tackles is hurt, those guys can kick out the tackle. So I think that's where the Jets are torn. And that's factoring in that, like, we don't think Rome Odunze is going to be there. We don't think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be there. We don't think Malik Nabers is going to be there. If one of those guys starts to tumble and the Jets only have to flip two spots, would they go up and get someone? Maybe. That would be interesting to me. But at the end of the day, it feels like they're kind of torn between Bowers and an offensive lineman. And it's almost like your heart wants to take Bowers, but your head is telling you to take offensive line. And I'm really fascinated by the decision the Jets ultimately make.
Yeah, certainly be one to keep an eye on. For you, Connor, I suppose, across the different rounds, who are some of the prospects that intrigue you? It can be for any reason, but you're kind of interested to see where they go, but also who they go to and ultimately what they might bring to the league?
I think two big wide receivers come to mind, Adonai Mitchell from Texas, Keon Coleman from Florida State. I have them at 41 and 42. I could see either of them sneaking into the first round at the end there, whether it's the Bills, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Niners. And you obviously like all those situations because of the quarterback play associated with those teams. And there's a reason why they pick at the back end of round one, because those players have flaws, but they also have incredible upside. Like Adonai Mitchell, size, speed, movement skills, hang time, red zone presence, really needs to be on all the time. Not always coasting through routes, you know, really low effort run blocking. Like the focus needs to just be dialed up to maximize his God-given gifts. Keon Coleman, not the smoothest separator, but can climb the ladder and catch the ball over anybody. He can catch a screen and run through anybody. So when the play breaks down, you don't need to be a quick separator. You just need to work back to your quarterback and use your big body to shield defenders and make a play on the ball. So at Mitchell and Coleman, I have 41-42, but we could walk out of this draft and with the right landing spot, we could say, wow, that guy's a top three receiver to come out of the draft. With the wrong landing spot, we can come out and say, man, that guy shouldn't have been taken until day three. So that's what makes guys like that so fascinating to me, is the variance and the trajectory of their careers based on where they go, because there's no denying how talented of players they are. And then I think what interests me also, and this is like a, probably only like a me thing, like where are Spencer Rattler and Michael Pratt going to go? Because all we do is talk about Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, and Bo Nix. It's like there's only six quarterbacks in the draft. But when you talk to teams, Rattler and Pratt seem destined to go on day two. So is there a team that loses the game of musical chairs with the top six quarterbacks and they go, I'll take this guy in the second round, I'll take this guy in the third round, and then we blink in December, they're starting, and nobody cared a week before the draft? Like, that is always what fascinates me. Think about, Colm, all the guys that started in the NFL last year. It's insane how many quarterback injuries there were. So those are the two guys where there's just no conversation around them, and I think we might be looking at things a lot differently at some point later in the NFL season. And I think with quarterbacks, I always get the nudge that, like, wherever you think they're going, expect them to go a little bit earlier.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Final one for me, maybe, like, a little bit different, but I'm intrigued for your opinion, right? Because the Rams are a team that really surprised last year, and Sean McVay was re-energized, but they've just lost, you know, the best defensive player in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on the Mount Rushmore. You got him and Reggie and JJ. He truly incredible. But they go into this season with, you know, I suppose they, what way would you lean in the draft? Like if Brock Bowers happened to fall, is that how they should go? Should they look at one of the receivers if Cooper Kupp has lost a step, or do they look to do the impossible, but they have to have somebody fill in for 99? And if they go down that route, how does the young player begin to try to do that?
So let me say this about the Rams. They are absolutely a sleeper to move up and make noise in this draft. They really are. And the thing is, you look at it and you go, how, right? They're not picking until, I believe, 19. So all the teams in front of them that we just talked about all the time, we think would be aggressive to go up and get a quarterback. Are the Rams a team that pounce in a different way? Do they look at it and go, okay, McVay's in it to win it. Stafford's not going to play forever. Let's get our guy now. We'll go up. One of the quarterbacks is going to slide. The Jets would love to get out of 10. The Falcons would love to get out of 8. Let's get in front of Minnesota, Denver, and Vegas. That just like quarterback trifecta. Needy trifecta. And everyone's stunned. The Rams pulled this off. Because the price is going to be lower to go to 8 to 10 compared to 3, 4, and 5. Or do the Rams do that anyway? But like you just said, Colm, it's because McVay has his foot on the gas to try to win while he still has Stafford. I mean, what does this offense look like with Brock Bowers, with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and DeMarcus Robinson? Like you're looking at and Kyren Williams. Like the Rams, I know the Rams are a sleeper to make noise, but nobody knows what it's for. That's the weird thing with the Rams. And it's hard to get up from 19. Like, it's far from a guarantee they could do it. But there is legitimate noise about them being interested in doing it. And it's such a weird thing because it feels like it's all about the future or all about the now. There's no in-between pick. There's not a guy they took, go, well, help us this year, but he's going to help us for the next, like, a tackle. Like, it feels like it's, we got Brock Bowers because we want to try to win the Super Bowl this year. We drafted Michael Penix or J.J. McCarthy because we want to reset this thing the right way after Stafford. Like, there's like an 8-year outlook and a 2-year outlook, and nobody knows what it's going to be for and if they could actually pull it off.
I want to thank you for your insights. For anyone out there who's watching this or who'll be listening to this on the podcast over the weekend and they're not already checking out your stuff, where can they do that?
Yeah, everything will be on NBC Sports for the draft. I'll have my top 300 the Monday of draft week. I will have my final predictive mock draft on NBC Sports the Wednesday of draft week. On NFL Stock Exchange, our YouTube channel for PFF, we will have a ton of content. We will recap round one. We will grade every team the Sunday right after the draft. We will do everything to really cover this draft leading up to it and recapping it. So it's going to be a busy week, man. I can't wait.
One question has come in,
okay,
from Rory Fitzgerald. He asks, do you think that there'll be more first-round trades this year or fewer than we might potentially or that we would usually see?
Well, technically, we already have one, right? Because yes. Minnesota did get Houston's pick, I guess, though, on the basis of draft night. So last year, and this is not like Carolina obviously moved up in advance, but we saw the Texans deal with Arizona. We saw Arizona move up and down. I feel like it'll be close to normal because I think it's going to be really hot in the top 15, and then it'll kind of teeter off where there's like people will try to move into 4. People will try to move into 5. People will try to move into 8 and 10. And then it feels like a little after that, it's just going to go dead. So I think it'll end up being pretty average, but I would have your TVs on by the time that clock gets rolling because it's going to be fast and furious in the first 2 hours.
People on this side of the Atlantic be very happy to hear that the trades might be done by pick 15 because at that point it's getting towards kind of 3:15.
That's a long time, yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Anyone watching, anyone listening, cannot advocate enough checking out Connor's stuff. The beautiful thing about it is that the NBC Sports website is not geo-blocked and all Connor's stuff is there, and you can go through it and kind of see the evolution of his thinking, and he kind of outlines it, and well worth checking out. He is on a plethora of podcasts. He is always great with his insights, and Connor, just cannot thank you enough for taking the time to chat to me today.
Oh, Kyle, my friend, it's always a good time, man. Thank you so much for having me. I'm sure we'll break it all down when this thing is finally over.